everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of them can make us play against. And make us ask for it. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the Tide, Honey Badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by BamaHammer.com. Tom, we teased a quarterback-centric show a couple of weeks ago. Now with Parker McLeod transferring, seems like good motivation for us to actually do that show, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. We've been anxious to have this discussion, and I'm ready to dive in and get to talking about it.
All right. Well, I think we have made our opinion pretty clear. Jacob Coker's the starter, right?
Man, if there's anybody in the Alabama faithful that's thinking Blake Sims is the guy, please email us and let us have a email discussion with you about that offline. You know, as people like to say, let's take that offline. If anybody still thinks that Blake Sims is a starter after watching the second A-Day in the past 2 years, then please email us so we can take this offline.
Well, and you know what? I think, you know, here's some of the theory that I have, or some of the thoughts that I have. You know, Jacob's coming in to be the starter. That's the design, and that's the plan. And if, you know, like you said, if there's someone out there that does not believe that, then they need to disabuse themselves of a wrong opinion. And here's some of the bullets that I would kind of tack to that. It's kind of the JUCO player theory. You know, Saban brings in a JUCO player with the intent of filling an immediate role. You know, most times a starter, certainly a role in the two deep. That doesn't always happen, but it almost always happens. And so if we're going to bring in a quarterback from another program that's, you know, that's a junior, it's almost the JUCO theory in work, you know, at play. He knows who's on his roster and he knows who Jacob Coker is. And if there's any question about him knowing who Jacob Coker is, guess what? Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban are very good friends. They've coached together. If Coker wants to leave for an opportunity to start somewhere because he's behind Jameis, I think that's something that Jimbo would support. And I think he'd be no happier for him to have a chance to play for his friend Saban. And I don't think Jimbo is going to try to, you know, sell a bill of goods. I think that, you know, hey, Nick, this guy can play. And if you have an opening, you know, we'll release him. I think it's that type of conversation, you know, that they had. You know, I've got a couple more bullets of why I think he's the starter. Del Rio leaving, I think, is a key indicator. I think it was pretty widely reported that for those observing practices that Del Rio had beat everyone out last year. We just don't play true freshmen. And I think Del Rio, you know, said, look, what else can I do? You're going to bring in someone else. You're not really going to give me a legitimate chance to start. I'm out of here. And so I think that's an indicator. Like you said, we've seen Blake Sims. And, hey, we have an enormous amount of offensive talent. If we have just a competent college quarterback, we could compete for a title. And so I think if you put all those together, it's pretty clear that Jacob is coming in to be the starter.
Well, I do think when you say Del Rio, you know, beat out the other guys, you know, for the listeners, we just think that he won that number two spot, right? And we think he won that during practice week in and week out.
Right.
Now, we can't see that on the field because Saban doesn't work that way. Saban doesn't work that backup quarterback in as much as we would like for him to do. And so, you know, even Alec Morris, who we thought was the guy, only got two snaps for the whole season. And we thought he would get worked in more and more as the season progressed. But as you mentioned, if Del Rio did win that backup job that we think he did, we'll never know because he wasn't going to pull a red shirt to give him those two snaps and blow a red shirt.
Right. And so what we'll see is, you know, he was a preferred walk-on He had scholarship offers at a number of programs. He walked on here because, you know, he could read a depth chart, and certainly his dad in coaching. And, you know, he left, and he's going to land somewhere, and we're going to hear his name on Saturdays because he's going to compete for a starting job, and he's going to compete and play well at the collegiate level. And I think that will be some indication that, you know what, he probably was pretty good, and he probably could have, even as a redshirt freshman, beat out some of these other guys. You know, you want to have as many quality guys that can play as you can. So I'm not saying that we were trying to run him off, but we would love to have him as a redshirt freshman and Jacob Coker competing with the likes of, you know, Cooper and Cooper Bateman and David Cornwell. But I think if you look at all the pieces together, the mosaic is pretty clear. Coker's coming in to start.
Well, I agree with you. I am going to challenge you a little bit on the Jimbo Fisher comment, and not challenge because you're probably correct. But if I'm Jimbo Fisher and we were one freak play in the Auburn-Alabama game of facing Alabama instead of Auburn in the national championship game, I'm a little surprised he's being so genuine with allowing Coker to transfer to Alabama. And well, you know, that surprises me. I know he's his friend and he's mentor, and he wouldn't be where he was if it wasn't for Nick Saban. But I'm sorry, I don't think I'd be letting him go to Alabama.
Well, I think you have to look at it a couple different ways, right? I think that you know, his preference clearly would be to keep Coker, right? You want to have two quarterbacks. I can't speak for the rest of their depth chart and their recruiting, but they've been pulling in some quality players. Quarterback is a unique position. You know, we see it even on our team pretty often that, you know, it's not like even a lineman or a defensive player or a running back where you rotate so many guys that being third or fourth on the depth chart still is an opportunity for you to play because we rotate so many people. Quarterback, and especially under Saban, we don't play a lot of other quarterbacks. You mentioned Alec getting two snaps all of last season. Blake played some, but there were a number of games where AJ played, front to back the entire game. And you could say that over the last couple of seasons. Quarterback's a unique position where it is your team. It is the quarterback's team. You don't rotate quarterbacks like you do or like you could at other positions. And so when the distance between you and the playing field, and that's really, you know, frankly, what, Parker had in front of him is a lot of bodies and not a lot of years, even though he was, still maybe just a redshirt freshman, not a lot of opportunity given all the people in front of him. There would have to be a significant rash of injury before, he really was able to see the field. And so you see players leave, and you have a guy like Coker. If he has the talent that he does, and he's going to be a junior, if Winston, the Heisman Trophy winner, comes back and plays, to that form for another season or two, Coker goes through his career and never plays. So if he has the opportunity to go somewhere, I think if a head coach and you call yourself a mentor of young men and you really want the best opportunity for them, you allow them to move on. And, if someone wants to
stay,
I'll put this point out here. If someone wants to just call me a Homer Alabama fan for saying that because we're getting the guy, well, know your sport a little bit better because we let Chad Lindsey go. And he's a guy that I think we would do well to have on our offensive line this year.
Well, I just know that in the past, when players in the SEC have transferred, there's been several situations on many SEC teams where it's been, you can transfer, just not to another SEC team. So maybe the rule, maybe the gentleman's agreement in the ACC is the same thing. And you can transfer outside the conference, and we're okay with that. And if that's the case, then we kind of lucked up because it is kind of like this guy is unproven at this point, but there's a lot of funny, really similarities here, right? He backed up AJ at St. Paul's High School in Mobile, Alabama.
Yep.
he's been working with the same quarterback instructor in David Morris in the offseason, who is also AJ McCarron's instructor as well.
Yep.
And so all that stuff is just hilarious ironies, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you couldn't write a better script if you tried.
No, you really couldn't. You really couldn't. Well, let's switch gears just a little bit. And, I have a couple maybe topics I want to hit. You probably do as well. But let me throw this up. And we've spent some time with this before. Why do we think Blake Sims was the backup, the number two, the first guy off the bench, whatever sort of term you want to put that? Why do you think this last season and maybe the season before he played that role when he demonstrated really, I would say, no right to that role based on what we've seen in A-Day the last 2 years?
Well, I would say for the listeners who haven't had the chance to listen to us over the several years we've been doing the show, that we were both dumbfounded at the beginning, right, as to why this was the case. And we really were struggling with this. And I have to give you credit for coming up with a theory that, quite frankly, is the best I think we can muster. And that is that, you know, he is an invaluable member of this team when it comes to running, you know, showing our defense what is becoming an increasingly more focal point of college offenses, and that is a dual threat quarterback. And maybe it's a combination of A, there hasn't been a strong second quarterback candidate, and B, he provides that dual threat that our defenses need to see. And maybe it's a combination of the two.
Yeah, I think that, and that's the only theory in my mind that's kind of has stood up to the test of time, you know, because this is a couple years ago that we started talking about this, and at the time, you know, we kind of flushed it out, and I didn't know if I believed it, but the more the time has kind of passed, and the more we've observed, and the more I've kind of thought it out, I just think there's something to it. I think when you know, the olden days of the third or fourth string quarterback being the scout team guy, because you're playing a lot against, you know, the power eye and the running teams. And so anybody can really hand off. And if you happen to play a strong armed quarterback that week, then maybe your number two becomes the scout team guy. And that's, you know, that's kind of how we've all kind of grown up with football being. But as we get into more of these hurry up, no huddle teams, the running quarterback, the dual threat athletes at the position, you can't fake that. You can't just put your, and unless you are one of those teams, right? And then your defenses see it, you know, all the time. But if you're not one of those teams, if you're a pro style team like Alabama is, then you can't just put just any old body in there to simulate the other team's offense. It almost is a recruited position. It almost is a starting position on the team, you know, because it's so critical that you're able to give your defense a look. I don't know if that would be an offensive starter or a defensive starter, but it's almost, you know, a critical position to the success of the team. And so I think there's a little niche that we've kind of carved out that, you know, be our scout team quarterback, and you will be at the front of the front of the line when it comes to coming into the game. Now, I do think that Saban has some genuine intrigue in the running quarterback. We've been certainly beaten by them. We've struggled playing them, and so I think Saban has some genuine intrigue. I think if Blake could really demonstrate some savvy in the passing game, that it would be more of a legitimate position, because he does change up the pace of the game. He certainly does when he comes in and he's allowed to play the running quarterback. But I think the bulk of it is his significance as a scout teamer, and we want to give a magnified reward for his contribution.
Well, I would hope that it also speaks to the lack of development in our backup quarterbacks, and I'm specifically referring to Alec Morris here. Because you and I both know that experience is huge. And this is where, you know, what an opportunity for Jacob Coker, right? The typical win-win situation, because he did battle Winston neck to neck. And I think Jimbo Fisher waited as long as he could in August to make the announcement. And so, you know, we sat here last year and said that Coach Saban needs to get some snaps to who we feel like is the heir apparent. And I hear what you're saying about this is our reward, but I don't think that reward is worthy of just being that dual threat guy. I want us to have a second string guy come in when we're up by three touchdowns to get some meaningful snaps so that he can feel more comfortable down the road.
Well, it does, you know, and I don't know if Alec Morse is another log on the Jacob Coker fire. You know, he got two snaps of all of last year, and we were pretty, you know, pretty firm going into last season, you know, saying, you know, Blake's going to be the guy in because of this idea, but we're going to see a lot of Alec Morse because we're grooming the next starter behind, you know, behind AJ. Well, I don't know how you bucket this necessarily, other than if you just you presume that that Alec was not as good as maybe we were thinking, or we would have seen more from him, or we potentially would not have felt so compelled to bring in someone like Coker. So, you know, Alec, I can go a couple of different ways. You know, we let him punt all through A Day, which makes me think that, you know, maybe we're trying to keep him around, kind of throw him a bone to keep him around, because he is one of the more tenured guys on the team. And so if things do go south with Coker and you're kind of left, well, what do we do next? Alec might be one of your go-to players. Blake Sims, I think, would be there. Cooper Bateman, based on what we saw in A-Day. But you might be left with, you know, if Jacob goes down or, you know, like I said, kind of craps out, you might be looking for what's the next available thing. And Alec, with another offseason and another fall camp, might kind of cross that threshold. And so I think we threw him the punting gig sort of as a bone in A-Day to encourage him to stick around.
Well, I think Cooper Bateman showed enough in the A-Day game that my hope is that we see that Jacob Coker uses his experience and his intangibles and his size and what he brings to the position. I hope he steps up and does win the job. But I think right now Cooper Bateman would have something strong to say about, you know, Alex Morris if something was to falter with Coker. You and I even spoke about after the A-Day game that right now, if I'm Coach Saban, and I'm hoping Coker just slides in and we don't miss a beat, I'm giving some extra work to Cooper Bateman because I think he's your fallback right now.
Yeah, I do too. I think that he is right now. I think that it would be some sort of combination of Sims and Bateman. I think we'd still give Sims an opportunity, but
not Alex Morris is what I'm saying.
Look, he's further down, right? So I was going to ask you this question, you know, how would you rank the 1 through 5, the guys, you know, with Del Rio leaving and Parker leaving, you know, we've got five scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. And so, you know, I rank them Coker 1, Sims will probably be the first one off the bench. But if we had to go long-term and replace a starter, I think it would be Bateman. So if they're co number twos, however you want to do that. I think Morris would be the fourth guy, and Cornwell would be the fifth guy. And that's largely a function of him just being a true freshman. And, at least at Alabama, we've never played a true freshman. We'd have to kind of dig up some LSU, thoughts for Saban there. But, he kind of leans heavy on the older upperclassmen at the quarterback position. So I would put Cornwell last. That's the order that I would put him.
Well, and ball security is so critical for Coach Saban. That's first and foremost. And so last year we said that Alec Morse would be the guy if AJ went down for a significant period of time. So, you know, I'm going to agree with your assessment and say that Cooper Bateman is this year's Alec Morse. Alec Morris is this year's Parker McLeod, and David Cornwell, right, is basically last year's Luke Del Rio, as I see it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, you know, you want some spread. You know, Coker's only a junior, and, you know, hey, he could have a phenomenal season and decide that he wants to leave. Hopefully he has a phenomenal season and decides he wants to stay. But, you know, if you look at Jacob being a junior, Blake Sims is a senior. Alex is a redshirt sophomore. And so, you know, you could make a case that all three of those guys are gone at the end of the season. You know, obviously Blake is a senior, but Alec could have a season where he says, you know what, I am going to transfer. And, if Jacob just is lights out, he may cash in on that. And then you're kind of left with Cooper and Cornwell, which are two quality guys. I'm not mad at either of them, but I think that would stand a reason for Bateman to get an opportunity for some reps. Let me throw this question at you. And it's, I don't mean it as a trick question. I think maybe it's just a topic for interesting conversation. But, you know, we talked last year, we played three quarterbacks, and that's almost a trick question because, you know, the such almost laughable little time that Alec did play. And it was like the last game of the season or second to last game of the season. It was almost embarrassing. It was just so little and so late. And the game was just, 30 seconds left in the game. Right. It was next to nothing. And so that's how we got to the three quarterbacks played last season. How many quarterbacks do you think play this year?
I hope that Cooper Bateman has shown more potential than Alec Morris did, which is why he saw the field and Alex was punting the ball. So I would hope what I wanted to see last year happens this year, and we see three quarterbacks, Blake, Coker, and Bateman.
Right.
But
and see them in legitimate
proportion. Based on last year, I bet you, as much as I want to see three, I bet you we just see two.
Okay. I'm going to go the other way. And when you say you hope to see three, I know that you mean those in legitimate proportions, you know, not Bateman getting two snaps, you know, against Georgia Southern at the end of the season or Western Carolina or some crap like that.
I'm sorry. Let me be more clear. If I had my preference, I would only see two, and it would be Coker and Bateman. That's it.
Okay.
I'd see Coker win the job. I'd see Bateman come in late in the, coming in the third and fourth quarter when we're up 20 points and get some valuable experience. And then Blake and Blake can just ride off into the sunset.
I set you up for that one, and I didn't necessarily mean it in quite that way, but I kind of agree that would be the Tommy model. I'm gonna go the other way, and I suspect that we see four quarterbacks, and I'm not predicting injury, but I do suspect that we'll play four quarterbacks this season. Cornwell, for the reasons we talked about him being a true freshman, will be the one that won't play. But we'll see Coker, Sims, Bateman, and we'll see a little bit of Morris. Now, we may see just as much Morris this season as we saw last year, but we will see him. But I think we'll see a more legitimate distribution of the snaps between Sims and Bateman behind, the clear number one, Coker. And I think what that is, I'm kind of predicting here, but when we see that, I would explain that as a little bit of the Kiffin effect on the offense, and probably a little bit of the Kiffin effect on Saban, kind of loosening him up a little bit. One of the weaknesses that we've had at Alabama is recruiting quarterbacks, hence the whole discussion of having to go get a Jacob Coker and all the theories and all the reasons why we have to do that. And that is one area that Kiffin has had some success recruiting quarterbacks. And I wonder if, and sort of my theory or thought process goes that let's get more of them on the field that show them that this is a quarterback-friendly program, that you're going to have a chance to compete and play, and it's not all shrouded in mystery. that let's get put the guys on the field and see what they can do against live fire. And that helps make the depth chart a little more obvious. And I think that helps in recruiting. And so I think I think the Kiffin effect sort of loosens the tight grip of control that we see Saban try to exercise over the position.
But if that's the case, then Alec Morris should have started for the other squad, and he shouldn't have started at punter then.
Look, I'm not saying, yeah, and I hear you. I'm not saying that we're going to see this overnight. That was the first opportunity really that Kiffin had, you know, coaching the squad. He's not going to change Saban's opinion overnight. I think, having the A-Day experience, having the practice, having summer, talking about recruiting, and then into fall camp, and then even into the season, you don't soften what I consider such a hard line stance in just a couple of weeks. I think it could take a couple of months, and then when you get into, September, October, November, Kiffin arrived in December and didn't really take a job until January, February. So, we're talking 6, 7, 8, 9 months there that he is softening that stance that I think Saban takes.
Okay.
That's just another theory. That's what we do.
I hope that's the case, because that means we'll see more Cooper Bateman. I would love that.
Yeah. I mean, the worst thing I can do is be wrong, but, that's the kind of ideas that we put out there for fun, to engage with folks. And, I certainly haven't seen that written anywhere or discussed anywhere. So, we'll kind of see how that plays out. Hey, one note, and I think two notes that I want to put out here, on Blake. I'm not, I don't dislike him. I hear great things about him, as an individual, as sort of a disciple of the Saban system. He may well go on and be a fantastic coach, just the execution, we see that struggling at sometimes. I do think, and I really do believe, Coach, when he says that Blake performs better in practice than he does in the games, or at least what we see in A-Day. And when he does have the opportunity against some of the lesser opponent and kind of relax a little bit, he had his best career performance against, Georgia Southern, which, I would dare say that's probably easier than seeing our defense in practice. And so he kind of relaxed and performed well. So I think there's an opportunity that he does practice better than he plays. But it's the performance, it's the ball protection, it's those kind of things that are going to keep you on the field with Saban. And I just want to absolutely, and I get this from, from one of our friends, that the reason that Blake is christened the number two quarterback is it's really a race thing. And, that's a sensitive topic, and I understand that. I just don't think Saban is putting, a black quarterback in the number two position for the sake of a race demonstration. And, see, I am not, I will let anyone have an opportunity, so I'll just put a black quarterback at the number two position. I don't think Saban's doing that. I think he is being placed at the number two position, but I think the reasoning is much more logical than and football, logical than just a race move. I think it's clearly based on what Sims is contributing as the backup quarterback. I don't know if you have a thought or opinion on that.
I can go both ways on that. I can see some credence to both arguments, specifically with the dual threat quarterback, because the dual threat quarterback is becoming more predominant in the high school game. I mean, you have a high percentage of high school quarterbacks that are dual threat quarterbacks coming out of high school, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what Lane Kiffin does. And we're going to talk about this in our next podcast about, you know, how he shapes the offense and what we see from the quarterback position. But you could say, I guess what I'll say is do I think he's doing it for race? No, I'm not saying that. But I do think that he is definitely trying to lend some credence to more and more kids coming out of high school that he's recruiting that are dual threat quarterbacks. And he's trying to get them to campus knowing that they're an athlete and that they have the measurables and that over time they might grow into a safety or a tight end or something like that. But he's got to get them to campus and say, I'm going to give you a look at dual threat quarterback when I truly don't think he has any interest of running that kind of an offense. I really don't.
Well, there's a lot of things there, right? You know, high school coaches and high school teams are going to put their best athletes at the quarterback position because, you know, they're going to touch the ball the most, right? And so the most dynamic athlete, you want to put the ball in his hands. And so a lot of teams will do that. And it is, you know, it's pretty universally known, even expected, that a lot of high school quarterbacks, because they are the best athletes on the team, that they're not going to play quarterback at the next level. They're going to play corner. They're going to play safety, wide receiver, running back. You know, some of them will get a chance to play quarterback. Some of them are legitimate quarterbacks. But the percentage on that is pretty low. I think that we are not going to convert ourselves into a no-huddle, you know, fast-break offense. We're not going to be, you know, Oregon South, right? That we're not going to do that. But I do think, and I have softened my opinion here. I think a year ago, 18 months ago, I would have said I would have disagreed with what I'm about to say. But I think Saban is intrigued by the prospect of, you know, having a quarterback that can stand in the pocket and throw the ball, but then who also has some mobility, and that potentially we could run some plays around that mobility. We've gotten burned with quarterbacks that can move inside the pocket, outside the pocket, you know, across the line of scrimmage. And so I think that if you have, and, you know, look, there may not be a quarterback that is high marks across both styles of play. And so it may be the white whale, right? But I think that Saban's intrigued at least by the concept or the idea of someone that has the ability to tuck the ball down and run and be effective, but that can also stand tall in the pocket and complete the passes.
Well, I will say, you know, comparing Coker to Winston for a moment, you know, in the times I watched Winston last year, you know, he wasn't going to outrun a linebacker. He moved well for a player of his size. And, you know, from what I've heard of Coker, because I have yet to see him here, just, you know, just saw some of his footage from last year and his limited playing appearances. He also has the ability, even at his size, that he can pull it down and pick up some yards in the way AJ did, right? Mm-hmm. AJ wasn't fleet of foot, but AJ could get you some yards. And so Winston, in my opinion, is really not your dual threat quarterback, right? He's not comfortable running the ball and doesn't look comfortable running the ball, but he at least is a gifted enough athlete that if he needs to run out of bounds for 20 yards because you gave it to him, he can do it. Yeah. And so it'll be interesting to see how Kiffin incorporates that with Coker, because it's my understanding that Coker might have a little bit more of that in him than McCarron did.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And so, you know, the naked boots and, you know, with run option or something like that, we may see some of that. You know, the casual fan watching the game is not going to say, wow, Alabama's really shifted up their offense. We've got too many weapons in the passing game, too many weapons in the running game. Again, a competent quarterback could do very, very well with this team. You know, someone who's, you know, better than average, you know, potentially outstanding, and then someone who themselves can be a weapon with the ball. You know, you start to have, you talk about multiples and multiplicity and making it really stressful on a defense. I could see with our weapons that we could deploy sort of in a standard offense. If a quarterback could just add just incremental to that, it almost has a multiplier effect in what the offense can do and how it can stress a defense.
Oh, absolutely. And so Cooper Bateman could be successful. I'll say Cooper Bateman on the current roster, I think more so than the others, could be probably fairly successful with the tools that we have at our disposal. Because look what he did without running with the ones, right, against the caliber of defense personnel that we have at Alabama. He looked pretty good, and he wasn't throwing to Amari Cooper. No, so I am excited to see what a Coker can do.
No, and I'm with you on that. And I the short story in my mind on that is, you know, he won A-Day with a walk-on center and playing against the number one defense.
And made some really sharp over-the-middle passes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He connected with some of the younger receivers very, very well. So, you know, that kind of bodes, if you think Coker's the next year or two, you think maybe Bateman, could follow that. You know, we look good at the position. Even though we put some question marks next to some of these guys, you know, with Coker and Bateman alone, I feel good about the next, call it 3 years, maybe four. And then Cornwell, we don't really know what we have, but he was recruited and he was a high ranked guy as well. So, you know, you could say the next 3-4 years we're pretty good at the position. You know, I think it's a position you always want to sign someone and you always want to sign the best guy that you can. We'll see how the recruiting goes this year. We had Ricky Town committed and, a sequence of events. He changed his commitment. And I think the name that's curious to me is David Seals. Kiffin was kind of laughed at when he recruited Seals. I think Seals was in eighth grade at the time. And everyone kind of laughed at that. And, you know, here he is, an up and coming junior or senior. If Kiffin was able to build that relationship, there's an opportunity. Maybe he takes a hard look at Alabama. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But I think we're going to make some moves. We're going to play some more players. And I think that, you know, if you were to target the one weakness that we've had in our recruiting and our development, it would be quarterback. And it almost sounds funny to say that when you think of the titles that we've won and, you know, the success that we've had. I think that would probably be the weakest position that we've had recruiting and development. And so I think Kiffin is an opportunity for us to improve upon that. And that's pretty lights out if we continue to get the talent that we're getting at the other positions, but we get just an incremental upgrade at what we're bringing in at quarterback. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, it is. And let's face it, right? That definitely – as much as I'm not crazy about Lane Kiffin for obvious reasons, he was probably one of the top three guys in the country to bring in for the intangibles that he can bring to the table.
Yeah. And look, I know we're going to do an offensive show and we're going to weave in some Kiffin talk, but man, I think it's a great hire. I am just beside myself with how pleased I am with this decision to bring him in. So, you know, we're going to spend some time on that topic, and I certainly predict big things for the quarterback position, the offense, obviously under Saban, but under Kiffin as well. I'm looking forward to fall camp, and you know, here we are June, and you know, we can almost start to see it and smell it from here. The summer workouts, you know, at the end of July. You know, the players are starting to report at the end of July and first part of August camp opens up. So we're just weeks away, man. We can you can start to smell it in the air.
Oh, absolutely, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Well, hey, just a couple of quick notes here before we wrap. The 2014 viewers guide is in the early stages of development. Getting a little bit of a head start on that this year. But those who were with us last year that picked up a copy of that, you know, first of all, we appreciate it. We got just a ton of phenomenal feedback on that. So we're going to put that together again this year. So I want to put that out there to the listeners. Be on the lookout for that, you know, at BamaHammer.com on the podcast. We'll have some more information on that. And because we are getting a head start on putting that together, And we're communicating that to you guys earlier than we did last year. If you have a topic or a question that you would like to see us address in the guide, drop us a quick email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. So alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. And we'll take a look at those questions and see how we can work them into the guide. If not the guide, then potentially a future show. We may try to have some sort of release party or gathering either in Atlanta or Tuscaloosa, just an opportunity to sit down with some fans and have a pop and talk football is really what that would be. So that could potentially be a really good time. And the second quick note, hey, if you're enjoying what you're listening to, and, you know, face it, you wouldn't be this far into this show if you weren't enjoying it, hit us up for a review on iTunes. Help boost our rankings so other Alabama fans and other football fans can find us there and sort of join the party that we're having here. Tom, I'm looking forward to our upcoming shows. We're going to talk a little offense, talk a little defense, talk a little Kiffin, and, you know, kind of have some fun with those types of discussions. Certainly looking forward to it.
Absolutely, man. We'll be doing that show in the next couple weeks, so you guys, you know, look out for it.
Absolutely. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening, and roll tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.